Earlier this month, correspondent Jeff London visited the fifth grade class at the Children's School in Brooklyn, where students are collaborating on an original opera.
When I went to public school in suburban Maryland in the 60s and 70s, arts education was pretty much an elective. Sure, once a week in elementary school, the entire class spent an hour with Mrs. Musher and her auto harps, but that was about it. By the time we moved on to junior and senior high school, a self-selected group of drama, choir, and band nerds threw themselves into whatever limited artistic activities were offered. But far fewer students went to see the annual spring musical than attended the weekly football games. And when it comes to funding, whenever there's a fiscal crisis, it seems like music and art teachers are the first to go. In the last few years, however, educators and community leaders have begun to recognize the value of arts education, not just for a few kids, but for everybody. Hollis Hedrick is the director of the Center for Arts Education, which helps promote and support arts programs for New York City's school kids. He says that a new way to look at arts education is as preparation for the real world.
In the kind of activities and the kinds of skills that the workplace and corporations and others tell us that they want students to have, the kinds of abilities and dispositions, are the kinds of things that the arts teach. Working in teams, being able to analyze a problem, critical thinking, being creative, being able to look at a situation and come up with multiple ways of approaching that.
One of the schools that the Center for Arts Education funds is PS 372 in Brooklyn. The school is half a block away from the auto shops and industrial buildings on 4th Avenue, in a kind of no-man's land between two residential brownstone neighborhoods. The arts have always been an integral part of PS 372's curriculum, but with a grant from the Center for Arts Education, the school has been able to expand its programs. Last November, all 50 students in the fifth grade started working with the Metropolitan Opera Guild to create their own opera, writing the libretto and score, designing the sets, costumes, and makeup, and performing all the roles. Everything is coordinated by dance teacher Sandy Rodriguez.
Having the children really take ownership of the project to feel that it is theirs is one of the primary goals.
The composers are working in this room today. And
once or twice a week, the entire fifth grade gathers in Sandy Rodriguez's classroom for a production meeting. All the kids work in teams, from the writers to the designers to the electricians. There's even a trio of students working as production historians, taking pictures and documenting every part of the creative process.
The children had to audition for jobs, and once we got through that process, then the writers found that they were part of a team of writers, you know, that one girl or boy isn't going to get to write the opera.
My name is Elvin Trejo, and my tag name is Peanut.
My name is Anya Berry, and I'm a writer. It was really hard to work with each other because at first we all hated each other,
We all hated each other, Anya. That's right.
No, we didn't all hate each other. Sometimes we wouldn't get along. And then after a while, we would get along. We all had great ideas. We would all make up songs.
Wouldn't it be great if your dreams would come true? Good dreams coming to you. Going on a cloud with the angels. Shooting fireworks from your fingers. Halloween and Christmas every night.
The opera is called The Dream Master, or What Did You Dream Last Night?
The story is about a girl or a boy, we're not sure who yet, dream stuff, and it comes true.
And handsome boys, non-stop TV and pay-per-view.
The four writers spent a month coming up with a libretto, frequently meeting after school and figuring out the plot and lyrics over pizza and Snapple. Now the opera's three composers are hard at work. One of them, a freckle-faced boy named Matt, played me a tape of their work in progress.
This is me on the guitar.
Me, hey, I put it from another tape and squeeze it in here.
We read the words and then we set it to music. We try to, like, think of melodies to go with it. And I mess around with the guitar, and that's how I got that part.
Frankie, Molly, and Amelia, the historians, took me on a backstage tour of all the different departments. There were electricians creating footlights out of old tin cans.
Then we're going to mount them onto these boards,
which are going to be connected to a series of dimmers.
Performers improvising movement while reading the lyrics.
Dreams cannot come true, yet we don't believe you.
And carpenters building scenery.
We're measuring. One kid holds one side and then the other holds the other side.
It was exciting to watch all the groups of kids at work. Everyone was engaged and invested in whatever job they were doing. And unlike the real world of opera with its caste system of divas and worker bees, there was a real sense of democracy to the process. Our last stop was the school library, where the PR department huddled over big sheets of construction paper.
My name is Leanna, and we're making posters to put up around the school to let everybody know that when our opera's going to be presenting.
And my name is Luce, and I'm doing a different one.
So tell me about the logo that you guys created, right?
Is this Yeah, we thought of, like, maybe, well, the Earth as a planet. And then,
it's my logo.
No, but I wrote the words in that logo.
So you collaborated on it?
Yes, we did.
When the opera premieres on Valentine's Day, all of the students, whether they're performing on stage or working backstage, will take a bow at the curtain call. Production historian Molly Hurwitz.
I think this whole opera isn't just about a show. I also think it's about, like, the whole fifth grade learning how to work together and make something happened.
For Studio 360, I'm Jeff London.